like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Jody Whitaker, who is campaign director for Chicago Alliance for Animals, or CAA, and in that capacity is spearheading CAA's campaign to ban horse carriages in Chicago. At the core of that campaign is the organization's contention that the city's horse carriage companies are regularly violating ordinances that dictate that these horses may not be worked more than 6 hours in any 24-hour period, often working the horses far more than that, sometimes twice that limit. Other concerns include the impact on the horses' hooves, of walking on streets and pavement for all those hours, and often doing so in extreme heat or cold. This is not the first effort to ban horse carriages in Chicago, and of course there have been comparable efforts in New York City. We'll hear about what's behind this effort, what the prospects appear to be for it succeeding, and more when I speak with Jody Whitaker in a moment here on Talking Animals. Later in the show, I'll speak with Kathleen Wood, Criminal Justice Program Fellow at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, where she helped prepare a report released Monday that ranks the best and worst states for animal protection. Also, I want to mention that the WMF Winter Fund Drive starts about 2 weeks from today. And as usual, I'll be offering some special exclusive thank you gifts for donations at various levels made in support of Talking Animals, including a pair of amazing tickets to see Willie Nelson performing February 15th at Ruth Eckert Hall. The last, at least couple of times he's passed through there, the show has sold out well in advance. I think it's close to that now. But we've got some primo seats, a pair, for a great donation in support of Talking Animals and WNF. We also have, of course, the fabled week-long stay at the Kauai Condo. And this year, or this drive, we have colorful animal-shaped phone stands. And if you're not sure what that means, these and other gifts can all be found and described in better detail at talkinganimals.net. You can also write me at duncan@wmf.org to find out more, including pledge prices, etc. And why not, either way, donate now via the Talking Animals tip jar at wmf.org. Lastly, a programming note for next week, when my guest will be singer-songwriter Maria McKee, who burst on the music scene about 35 years ago, fronting the band Lone Justice, has since gone on to make a number of solo albums. She's preparing to release her first new record in a decade, in fact. More recently, has been working in independent film, has long been a dog person, and has recently become a passionate Greyhound devotee. So we'll cover all that and more next Wednesday on Talking Animals. Right now, though, let's get to Jody with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Jody Whitaker on Talking Animals. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining me on Talking Animals.
Thank you very much.
So, of course, the core of our conversation this morning will be about the campaign to ban horse carriages in Chicago, and we'll get to that in a moment. But before we get into the campaign, let's get into the campaigner. So, when did you first get into this sort of work? What was your earliest act of activism?
I've been working in the field professionally since 1997, but I was always very interested and had a love for animals since I was a child. But professionally worked for organizations since 1997, and have been working on this campaign to ban horse carriages since for 3 years about now.
And just to back up a little bit, in 1997, what organization or organizations, plural, were you working for?
I started at a shelter here in Chicago, Treehouse Animal Foundation, no-kill cageless cat shelter. And then I worked for a nonprofit downtown to work working against animal experimentation. Then I moved around the country a bit, working for some organizations. And then I worked on actually a Greyhound campaign in Massachusetts to end Greyhound racing. That was on the 2008 ballot, and we ended Greyhound racing in the state of Massachusetts, which basically liberated over 2,000 dogs.
I was definitely going to get into that in some detail, because as you might imagine, speaking to you from Florida, we have great interest in any campaign that ends Greyhound racing, and so we'll get more into that maybe in a few moments. But I'm curious, just because that sort of track record, always interested to know how someone that sort of clearly, I think, born really to be an advocate, activist. When you were growing up, how politically aware or active was your family? Was that sort of important to them?
I wouldn't say we were very politically active on animal issues.
Even just generally, sometimes that comes as a product of just being sort of plugged in generally, and then you find a particular area of interest.
Right. Yeah, I would say that we were very aware of issues growing up, and that's why I leaned toward this field, because my family was very, you know, we took in all the strays and so forth. We took in a baby lamb whose mother abandoned it, and we had a baby lamb in our living room in a playpen.
Wow. That might take the top story. I mean, I've been talking to people that do cool things like you do for years and years, and inevitably they're often the person that tended to the sick or injured animal or a bird with a bum wing or whatever, but I don't think I've ever spoken to someone who took in a lamb, so that puts you definitely at the head of the class. Yeah. So obviously animals were important to your family and generally politically aware family, and so in some ways that may have shaped your path. I mean, was there at some point or another, maybe early on, was there a sense of the underdog, defending and helping the underdog?
Yeah, from my early days, I remember where I grew up. I grew up about 3 hours west of Chicago, a very small town near the Iowa border, and in my neighborhood, there were a lot of houses and families that had dogs on chains. And I remember that being my first kind of like issue that bothered me greatly, is I would go around the neighborhood and sit with these dogs on chains. And it really was something, I mean, because we had companion dogs and cats, and they all lived in the house with us and slept on our beds. And so I would think about these dogs on chains, pretty much could not get them out of my head. And that's an issue that's bothered me my entire life, that, you know, I think in this day and age that should completely be illegal. So that was, probably one of the first things that really hit me hard and that got me moving toward doing what I do now.
Yeah, well, especially in that area, I mean, just dogs on chains, it gets, I think, anybody that has a feel for animals, as you do, and many of the people who listen to this show do, and I guess, well, obviously, I do. I mean, just dogs on chains is sort of heartbreaking from the get-go. But then if you think it's anywhere near Chicago or anywhere where then you also have harsh cold, and again, some of the stories that have emerged in recent weeks, some of these horrible storms have kicked in about dogs left chained in freezing temperatures. It's like,
right.
Oh my God. I mean, what? Anyway, well, that's a topic for another show, I guess. But anyway, very upsetting. So anyway, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Jody Whitaker, campaign director for Chicago Alliance for Animals, and she's spearheading the organization's campaign to ban horse carriages in Chicago. If you'd like to ask Whitaker a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So you touched on, and I just want to develop it maybe a little bit more, that even though you were kind of near Chicago, I guess, but you have moved around a little bit, so you kind of ran through some of the other stuff you've done in the realm of animal advocacy and activism. You talked about the successful campaign a few years back to ban greyhound racing in Massachusetts. So again, those of us here in Florida, where it's not only still exists, but is prevalent to a degree that sort of dwarfs what happens anywhere else, very interested in that. So in a nutshell, if that's even possible, like, how did you structure the campaign and how did it succeed to that extent?
Well, when I joined the campaign in 2007, the organization, the main organization behind the movement, Grey 2K USA, had already been working on the campaign for years. So they actually had tried it and had gotten the sufficient signatures to get the ballot on the to get it on the Massachusetts ballot, but unfortunately it failed. The voters didn't vote for it to succeed. And so by the time I got on the campaign, they had kind of learned what works and what didn't work, and they had obviously grown in strength and in numbers with volunteers. So luckily I was part of part one of the campaigns that succeeded. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that, just like here with the horse carriage campaign, one of the aldermen had proposed it back in 2014, and now it's 4 years later. So, you know, with time and with the public's attitudes changing, we hope that we can get there. And actually, when I worked on the campaign in Massachusetts, and then we won, and we got it on the 2008 presidential ballot, they said that Florida would be the hardest state to succeed in banning greyhound racing. And now I think they've already got legislation working on it. So things are moving in a very good direction in that area as well.
Well, there's a constitutional amendment that is pending, and if that gets through the various stages, it sounds like it could end greyhound racing. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. But meanwhile, in the Massachusetts thing, what were the key things you learned from that effort that was ultimately successful to greyhound racing? And which of those things have you applied to the campaign to ban horse carriages?
I was the campaign director and the signature campaign or volunteer director. My job was twofold. At the start of the job, it was more reaching out toward volunteers. So I learned that reaching out to, you know, your supporters is very important, and keeping them in the loop on a daily basis is critical to winning the campaign. And that's something I started a couple months ago with this campaign, is the importance of reaching out to our volunteers. We have a daily action alert where we ask our volunteers to take action, whether it be contacting an alderman, making a phone call, sending an email, sending a tweet. And so that was one thing I learned that was very important, as well as reaching out to the decision makers. A lot of people will tell you, when you ask them to, you know, make a phone call or participate in a daily action alert, sometimes you'll have people who will say, well, my alderman doesn't care. I've reached out to him before. He just doesn't care. Well, that may be true. And, you know, but the fact is it's important to still make that call, because just because they might not necessarily care about the issue we're working on, they do care about what the public thinks. And so it doesn't matter, is what I try to explain to everybody. It doesn't matter what your alderman thinks. They still need to hear from you. And if they hear from more of you, then we can really make a difference. And I think that's how we won in Massachusetts. We went around the state and we met with our volunteers. We had meetings around the state, and then we'd meet with the decision makers in those different areas of the state. And that's kind of what we've taken here on the horse carriage campaign, is reaching out to the aldermen, reaching out to the mayor, trying to set up meetings with them, and they are hearing from us. We've had postcard writing campaigns where we send postcards to the aldermen. When we have our educational outreach downtown, every month we will ask anyone who will sign our petition in person, we'll hand them a postcard, whether they live in Chicago in the suburbs or in a different state or even country, they can send a postcard to our mayor. If they live in the city, they could send a postcard to their alderman. We have them stamped, and all they have to do is sign it and pop it in the mail.
Now, I think this is a pretty widely understood term, but just in case there might be a few folks listening who are not quite certain, can you just say what an alderman is?
Sure. Well, in Chicago, they're basically like city councilmen. There are 50 in the city of Chicago, and which is quite a bit, but obviously we're a big city. So there are 50 decision makers here that we need to reach. And the mayor doesn't just pass legislation, which I think some people, you know, aren't familiar with. I wasn't familiar with until I started working on the issue, that you can't just have the mayor change it. You have to go through the aldermen. And every resident of the city has an alderman, depending on where they live.
That is quite a large number. I mean, I thought of them essentially equivalent to a city councilman, too. But I guess even I didn't realize there was that many,
right?
Which may make it tricky to navigate, but I see why there's so much effort put on the aldermen, because if there's that many, you really got to work hard to get a huge number of them thinking in the right direction, quote-unquote. So
Right.
We've got some callers here. Let's take them. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Jody Whitaker.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for caring. There's so many issues, and I'll try and be concise. First of all, I'd like you to address what appears to be governmental corruption and incompetence in Chicago, in which your organization and others have had to fight just to get the relevant government agencies to do anything at all to enforce the laws that protect these poor horses. Second, I think that we need to go with the real emotional, moral, ethical, spiritual issues when we do marketing against these types of animal abuses, because the real problem is that humans have been raised to believe that all other animals are here to serve us. And it's just across the board, whether it's vivisection, eating animals for food, using animals as beasts of burden as they're done here, totally cruel, lacking in empathy, no understanding that I always say to people, how would you like it if other animals could do to us what we do to them, put a thing around our neck and in our mouth and tie us to some heavy carriage with a bunch of drunken fools in it and force us to walk up and down cold, dangerous streets all day? We wouldn't want anybody to enslave us that way. It's totally immoral what people do to use animals as their servants across the board. And right. That would be good to have in your marketing, but I think the main thing you could enlighten our listeners about is the utter corruption of the Chicago government so that they don't really punish these people, even when you guys repeatedly demand that they do?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's very important to bring up, because you are exactly correct. And actually, Chicago is not unique to this issue. I've spoken with advocates around the country, actually around the world, in Canada and other cities that are still have this archaic, unnecessary, and very dangerous activity on their streets. And what it comes down to is every city has regulations and laws on the books regarding horse carriages, but they simply aren't enforced. So not only are they not enforced, the horse carriage companies and the drivers are routinely breaking the law. We have documented for the entire year of 2017, we would take days where we would have volunteers go down and document the horse carriages. I went down on my own because I wanted to make sure that no one saw me. The Saturday after Thanksgiving and the Saturday before Chicago's horse carriages, licenses were being renewed. I documented at least 50 violations that day. I was down there from 11 in the morning till after 11 o'clock at night. I have two drivers that work their horses over 12 hours. The majority of the carriage drivers work their horses over 10 hours, and every carriage driver out there that day broke the law, which means they had their horse out there 6 hours or more. And then the next day, the Sunday, the 25th, we found many of the same drivers with the same horses down there on the street again, working the horses likely another 10, 11, 12 hours. So the law in Chicago says they're only allowed to work 6 hours in the 24-hour period. And in August, in September, in November, we documented them all overworking the horses. I spoke with the supervisor of investigations at the Chicago's Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, which is the city agency that's supposed to enforce the law. I've spoken with him and the office multiple times in the last year, and I was told that, in quotes, I mean, he told me this, and I wish I had video, audio taped this. He said that they don't work weekends and that they're complaint-driven. So they're not down there on Saturdays and Sundays when the carriage companies are breaking the law the most. They only respond to violations when they're contacted. So the public has to do the work of the city agency, and when we do the work, they do investigate it. And to tell you how it works is, in 2015, the companies were cited three times and only fined once for $100. In 2016, they weren't cited at all, weren't fined at all. In last year, they were fined $8,500 due to our violation, to our documenting. And that's not even nearly as many violations as we found. But, I mean, if you look at the fact that they basically weren't fined the last 2 years and then they were fined $8,500 last year, that says a lot. So, so what it comes down to is these carriage companies and drivers break the law. That's basically how they work. And the only time, I mean, in St. Louis, they are not even enforcing the law at all. I mean, even if the advocates are out there trying to document it, they just are not following the law. They said they don't have to. And Chicago actually has pretty good rules. The fact that 6 hours is nice, because some of these cities, they can work them 9 to 10 hours. But again, these drivers are working them 12 plus hours. The lawyer who, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but I'll tell you this. The lawyer who represents all three Chicago horse carriage companies went on record in an article in WTTW in right after our documentation in November and said, if the six-hour rule were enforced, strictly enforced, the carriage companies would be out of business. So basically, in other words, the business model of these carriage horse owners is to break the law.
And so they do, and it sounds like among the things you're describing there, Jody, is that they're just, as we see in so many other instances as well, there just isn't enough resources to enforce this. So
Right. These
things get ignored, and it sounds like some cases flagrantly so, but there's nobody to really clamp down or write those violations or do anything that's really going to persuade those companies to say, hey, I guess we do need to keep closer to the 6 hour.
Right. We went down there on Labor Day, on the Sunday of Labor Day, and I had about 12 volunteers take 2 hour shifts throughout the day. And that was the first time that I think we caught maybe two of the drivers working their horses over 6 hours, but the majority all went in within 6 hours because we were out there. They knew we were there. And so they didn't take the chance on getting fined. But it's pretty sad that, you know, members of the public have to do the job of the city. And that's what it comes down to is, you know, regardless of how good the laws are on the books, they're not being followed and they're not being enforced. And, you know, the overworking is just one aspect we've documented. We've documented the horses not having drinking water. We've had to call 911 about that. And then when we call 911, 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, someone comes out to give water. Because in the wintertime, in the summertime, they have fountains to drink from if the drivers allow them to stop and drink, which they don't always do. So in the winter months, they have to put water in a bucket for them because the fountains are obviously frozen. We've also documented them working them in the summer when it's been 90 degrees or higher. We've had the drivers lie to the police, saying that, you know, there's a certain website that is the official one to check for the temperature. When I contacted the supervisor of investigations, he said, no, there is no official website that we use. So we've documented the drivers lying to the police. They break laws that are not necessarily animal welfare laws, but laws that are meant to protect the public, such as going down certain streets during rush hour or going down certain streets on Saturday nights that they're not supposed to be on. So they disregard the law every time they're out. Every time we're down there, we have documented them breaking the law.
So, Jody, then this makes me wonder, like, with the earlier efforts you described about efforts to get stuff to the alderman, to the mayor, I mean, where is your campaign going, do you think, and what are its prospects?
Well, due to our documentation and due to our outreach to the aldermen, we are actually starting to make progress. In December, December 13th, I believe, the Sun-Times reported that two aldermen have proposed an ordinance to ban the horse carriages. In essence, that they would not renew their licenses when they were due at the end of November. So at that point, it was basically a year away. When I had done the documentation and we had the media at the end of November, we had asked the city not to renew their licenses because we had documented so many violations. But the city did renew their licenses. So shortly after that, because their licenses expire at the end of November. So in early December is when the article came out that the aldermen have proposed this ordinance to not renew their licenses this year. So that's where we are right now. We have been asking our volunteers every day to contact a different alderman and ask that alderman to support this ordinance and co-sponsor it. So we'll continue to be reaching out to aldermen. Right now, our goal is to reach the aldermen in the committee where the ordinance is, which the committee it's in. And we are also working to get a meeting with the three aldermen who are sponsoring the legislation.
So, I was about to ask, like, what if you had an ability to kind of quantify out of the 50 or so aldermen that you mentioned earlier. But it sounds like, as with many things, it's more the specific committee members, those aldermen, and how they feel and which way they're leaning, which will determine the fate of this. Is that right?
Right. Well, we know there's three who officially sponsored it. We know of two that we've spoken to who have given us their commitment to support it. So far, not a lot of the aldermen have really been forthright in giving us their position on the issue. We've been asking them to please support it, but now our efforts are kind of turning a point from asking the aldermen to support this ban to asking them what their position is and getting a definite position. And, you know, if they're unsure, if they're on the fence, then I will do my best to reach out to them, try to meet with them, show them our documentation, show them how many accidents happen almost on a weekly basis. I mean, since June of 2017, I know of at least 12 accidents, very serious accidents, where children have died, where horse carriage drivers have died, where horses have dropped dead on the street. And we know of 4 accidents here in the city of Chicago since 2014 that there were no serious injuries or fatalities that we know of, but that doesn't mean it couldn't have happened. And actually 2 weeks ago, a horse carriage operator and her horse both died when an SUV hit her carriage. Well, back in 2014, a van hit a carriage here in Chicago where 4 children and the driver had to be rushed to the hospital. Those children and the driver were okay, but it's basically the same situation that happened in San Antonio 2 weeks ago where the driver and the horse died. So had those children or the driver not survived, had it been a different outcome, we would probably not have horse carriages on our street right now. So it's just a matter of time. And like I said, there's been these serious accidents that happen almost on a weekly basis. Last week it was New York City. The week before was San Antonio. In December it was Milwaukee. And these are just off the top of my head. There's many that I don't remember.
So here, I'm too grizzled to be as wide-eyed as this might sound at first, but let me just ask, even not counting all those accidents and incidents and things that clearly threaten the public safety, to say nothing of the horse's safety, why are there some aldermen apparently, and maybe even just some regular old citizens, who would oppose the ban, would want to continue the horse carriages? What is their position?
I would think that the only main position that any supporter of horse carriages has is a financial reason. Obviously, the drivers, it's a job to them. The owners, it's their livelihood. And you know, we understand that. And our goal is not to take a job away from anybody or, you know, shut down a business and put people out of business. However, it is 2018 now, and we don't believe anybody should be profiting off of animal exploitation and animal abuse. We've proven time and time again that they break the law. And, I mean, think of it this way. If a liquor store sold alcohol to an underage person and they got caught, they would lose their liquor license and they would be shut down. Yet these horse carriage companies can continue to flagrantly break the law, get fined, and as long as they pay their fine, they get their licenses renewed. So, you know, they're making their own bet. They're the ones breaking the law. So they're breaking the law. It's a dangerous activity. I've had people say, well, so are, you know, cars are dangerous too. Yes, obviously that's true. But most people need a car to get to work, to see family, to drop their children off at daycare, and so forth. No one needs a horse carriage to get to work. You know, it's a dangerous activity. And, you know, keep in mind, in cars, you need children's seats, you need the child car seats, seat belts. None of this is required in a horse carriage. In St. Louis, we know of a horse that got spooked and the child, a woman jumped out of the carriage holding a baby, and the child, a little girl was in the carriage when the horse took off. So not to get off the topic there, but it's just the unnecessary and dangerous aspect. So money, I think, is the issue. There will be people who always say, well, it's, you know, many people don't get to see horses, you know, and that it's a quaint or romantic activity. But none of that should really matter. I mean, not all traditions are good. And with the traffic in a major urban city like Chicago, it's just too dangerous. And I don't see any other reason for it.
Yeah, I'll come back to something else that seemed to pop up in a comparable effort a few years back in terms of horse carriages in New York City. But let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Jody Whitaker of Chicago Alliance for Animals, and she's leading the organization's campaign to ban horse carriages in Chicago. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-3333. 503-733-0885. So some of our emailers, one says, thank you for your good work on behalf of horses in so many cities. Horse and carriage rides are so outdated and cruel. Mayors have to be enlightened enough to stop it. The public has to step up and stop it. It breaks my heart to see how the horses suffer, even in so-called, quote-unquote, evolved urban centers. And then another one wrote in, and part of his message was, could your guest get President Obama on board to help with this issue? It would be great if Obama would advocate for the horses.
Well, we would love his endorsement.
Yeah,
we are reaching out to decision makers, to businesses, to celebrities for endorsements. And currently, we have over 50 endorsements from businesses, and we are have more coming in every day. We have almost 12,000 signatures online, and at least over 1,000 signatures that we gather in person during our educational outreach event. So it's not a bad idea to reach out to President Obama.
Past and present Chicago residents certainly, if they happen to have been president of the United States, couldn't hurt. And something tells me he'd be right in line with you guys. So yeah. So in fact, let me let folks know, too, that to find out some of that information and see some of the people who signed on board, I would guess, correct me if I'm wrong, Jody, but the best thing would be to search on Facebook for Chicago Alliance for Animals, and you can really see kind of a running tally of people who have signed the petitions and the daily action alerts that people have followed, and just kind of chart sort of what's going on and some of the momentum that appears you guys are building here.
Right, and if anybody does want to get involved in our campaign, you don't have to live here in Chicago or in Chicagoland. You can live across the country and still help us, because tourism is a very important issue that the carriage companies use their advantage. And they say the tourists love to come to Chicago to ride in a horse carriage. That may be true. There may be some tourists who come here and they ride, but that is not the reason people come to Chicago. I mean, Chicago has so many, and every city, has their own charm and reason why people want to visit there. And we've got the blues, we've got music, we got pizza, we got the lakefront. We've got so many attributes here in the city, and so many great ways to, have fun and enjoy the city without exploiting animals in the process. So I don't believe that a ban on horse carriages would harm our tourism industry whatsoever. In fact, it could help, because we go out downtown every month and we speak to tourists around the world. And I've had so many people tell me that they hate seeing the horses suffering on the street. And I understand that, because when I travel, I feel the same way. I've been, say, when I've gone to New York City, when I went to Montreal, and I see the horses suffering, it ruins my day. So, horse carriages are not necessarily a tourism attraction. It can be a very sad thing to many tourists to see horses, and you see these horses with their heads bent low, and they don't seem happy.
Yeah.
And it made me think of something that the Alderman Riley stated in an article right before the announcement of their ordinance to ban horse carriages. He said something to the effect of, carriage companies will tell you that these horses love pulling carts around in a highly congested city. And he said, I just don't buy that argument. And I appreciate him saying that, because that's, it doesn't take, a brain surgeon to determine that. They've got a bit in their mouth, they've got all these straps on them, they cannot do anything naturally. We've got video of horses that's just twitching, and they cannot reach an itch, they can't get a fly off their, I've got a video of a horse with a bloody wound on his leg, and he's got, in the summer, flies flying around the sticky, bloody wound. Can't get to those flies.
Yeah.
And every natural movement of this horse is restricted, and they're working them in extreme heat in the summer. We haven't seen them out. They actually stayed in. We had a really bad cold snap on Christmas Day. We did not see them out, but in the past we had. But regardless, no horse wants to be enslaved in that situation. They'd rather be free without all those attachments on them and living in a, a more natural state in the pasture with other horses.
Yeah.
So for the alderman to state that, is, I really appreciated that, because I think that's common sense.
Well, we're just about at the end of our time here, Jody, but I have a couple more questions for you, and I want to get at least one more caller involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Jody Whitaker. Hello, it's you.
Can Jody tell me, are there large parks, areas like that in Chicago? I'm not familiar with the town.
Large parks
in there.
large parks for the horses, or?
Parks that are available for the horse trails to go through. I'm speaking of what I knew in Munich. There's a lovely big park, not huge, but it's good size, called the Englischer Garten. There are horse carts, horse wagons, horse carriages, all sorts of horses there. No cars, of course, but now that's a lovely situation. You can enjoy driving through the park in these carriages and things like that. On city streets, no, that's horrible.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Thanks,
actually,
caller.
Actually, the Alderman Riley did suggest that maybe getting them off the streets and instead putting them in the park, which would be better, but I still don't think that's the right answer. Because, as we've proven, these horse carriage companies do not follow the law. So if we do put them in the park, that doesn't mean they're going to follow the law and only work them 6 hours in a 24-hour period. They still likely would still be out there working 12-plus hours on 90-degree-plus days, or when it's too cold or slippery or icy, because the city is not, they don't have enough investigators to do their job. They've already told us they don't work weekends. So they could be in the park, not around cars, but they might still work them 12-plus hours. They might still work them when it's 92 degrees. So
the fundamental issues would still be present on the street, in the park, wherever. So that
and the animals are still going to be in this inhumane state where they cannot do anything naturally. And you know, it's regardless of where these horses are working, it's inhumane, in my opinion, and it's exploitation. I think the only answer is a complete ban. Plus, even though they're not around motor vehicles, that doesn't mean there won't be an accident. Because in the parks, we have joggers, we have bicyclers, we have rollerbladers, people walking, children running across areas. So that doesn't, it won't prevent an accident.
Yeah. So, Jody, we're just at the end of our time. I just want to, unfortunately, don't have really time now to get into specifics, but as you alluded to, there are these kinds of issues and occasionally attempted bans elsewhere. In New York City, certainly services periodically in that realm. And I remember a few years back, Liam Neeson famously kind of waded into this debate. And around that time, this is what I mean, I guess, about like some of the other views that wouldn't say, well, they wouldn't identify themselves as sort of pro-cruelty. But there are people who, for, like you kind of said, things are quaint and romantic. But I think some people are somehow hooked into some sort of tradition of this, because Liam Neeson had this whole viewpoint that he articulated quite a bit at that time. And then around that same period, as I recall, there was a top New York Times editor, Andrew Rosenthal, who wrote a piece that blasted de Blasio, because this was right around the time de Blasio got elected, for suggesting a priority when he took office would be to ban horse carriages, and just like, hey, you can't have New York City without horse carriages. And so I guess the reason I'm bringing those things up is that sometimes you're just up against this kind of odd, well, at least to me and others, philosophical blockade that people just aren't hearing some of the things and aren't even responding, even if you're showing them video or photographs of what the horses have endured. They have this other whole romantic notion of horse carriages, and so I don't know to what extent you felt like you've been up against that in this effort, but it does seem like at least in certain places that's one key obstacle.
Right. I mean, I haven't heard that from our aldermen specifically.
Good.
About, you know, that yet.
Great.
But the fact is I haven't spoken to the majority of them. So
yeah.
That is, you know, that is an ongoing process, is to reach out to them, because it's not an easy task.
For sure.
Necessarily.
Right.
However, you know, just like we've heard with the circus, there are people who, you know, they feel like this is a, you know, they want their children to be able to go to the circus and see the elephants and tigers and so forth. And we have to continually educate the public, as we are doing with the animal circuses, that, you know, we understand your children want to go to the circus, but not at the expense of animals living in confinement, you know, their entire lives and having a very unnatural and abusive life. So, you know, I understand tradition and, you know, well, I did this, you know, I rode a carriage when I got married. Well, you know, okay. But things have changed, and the public needs to be educated that animal exploitation is not a good thing. And if we want to stop bullying, I really believe this is true, that it's all connected, and humane education is very powerful. And if we want to stop bullying in schools, we have to stop bullying those without a voice as well.
Yeah.
And that's just part of our job as advocates, is to continually remind the public, you know, I understand you think it's romantic and that you would like to try it, but there's other ways to be in the city of Chicago or whatever, New York City, and have a romantic night out. You can take a boat ride. You know, you can...
Any number of other things. Yeah,
yeah, any number of other things.
Right. Well, that's why early on I asked you, you had that sense of defending the underdogs. I really got that from some of the work that you've done before and the work that you're doing now. But we are at the end of our time, Jody. But we've been speaking with Jody Whitaker, again, from Chicago Alliance for Animals. Best way to find out more and maybe even get involved, again, you don't have to be a Chicago type to do so, is just search for Chicago Alliance for Animals on Facebook and see all their action and daily action alerts and some of the things that have been signed and other things where you might be able to get involved even from a distance. So, Jody, thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals, and thanks for your great work on behalf of these horses.
Thank you so much for giving me the time to tell you a little bit about it, and thanks for the good work you're doing, too.
All right. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
In a few moments, I'll speak with Kathleen Wood of the Animal Legal Defense Fund about that new report ranking the best and worst states for animal protection. Sneak preview, Illinois, in light of what we're just talking about, I think is interesting, is number one. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. Inspired by our conversation with Jody and the virtues of that kind of animal activism, I thought we'd reprise this piece by Nick DiPaolo called Animal Activists in today's Comedy Corner. On Talking Animals.
I'm sick of activists. Everybody's a goddamn activist in Los Angeles. Everybody's like an animal activist. I love animals too. But you know, if I see one more person walking a dog with a coat on it, I'm gonna stab him. I swear to God. That's the first sign of mental illness. You start dressing up your pets, okay? Take the snorkel jacket off the chihuahua. The dog was born with a coat. He doesn't need another one. It's like giving an alligator false teeth. Leave him alone. On the lawn, he licks his own balls. Let's buy him a tweed jacket. We don't even have kennels now. We have doggy hotels in this country. Did you see this? We got people sleeping on the streets in this country, yet somewhere there's a poodle pissed off because a maid didn't leave a liver snap on his pillow last night. I got a lady that lives next to me that talks to her pets like she thinks they're human. She's yelling at her dog last week. She's going, "Did you hear what I said? Did you hear what I said?" I go, "You know, I think his hearing's perfect. It's the English language that's throwing him off a tad. Maybe he can't hear you because he's wearing earmuffs and a hat."
That was Nick DiPaolo with a piece called Animal Activist, taken from his album Born This Way. Unable to reach Kathleen Wood, but I am going to try again. So we will hear this tune for a moment or two, and we'll, in the lock, we'll be back with Kathleen Wood here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Well, unfortunately, Kathleen doesn't seem to be around. So coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lurie and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint, with Nola Lalay. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. Meanwhile, on this show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering the newest edition of the Talking Animals T-shirt. In fact, we're going to get into to that right now. So, Name That Animal Tune is a giveaway. Please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize. Again, the newest edition of the Talking Animals T-shirt to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, which is a carryover from the Dolphin Show a few weeks back. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Full of wonder, flying there under.
Can you name that animal too? Gosh, I kind of thought it was a gimme, but anyway. Well, any guesses do come in, we'll probably take them off the air after the show at this point. I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. I hope you'll join me next week. And my guest again will be Maria McKee, singer-songwriter extraordinaire. Lone Justice many, many moons ago, but a lot of great solo albums since, getting into independent film, both the behind the scenes and in front of the camera in recent years. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, preparing to release her first new record in a decade. Again, big dog person for many years, and more recently has become an all-out greyhound devotee. So we'll talk about all those things and more next Wednesday on Talking Animals. I hope you'll go to talkinganimals.net also to look at some of the thank you gifts that we have for donations at various levels in support of Talking Animals and WMNF. We'll be gearing up for, our fall fun drive, which starts February 8th. And also visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow me on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Handpicked music and news. Thanks for listening. Rob Loy is up next with Radioactivity after 5 minutes of NPR News headlines. And we'll catch up with you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on WMNF on Talking Animals. Thanks.